In this beautiful summer camp to give two shirim a week. Usually one of them is the day either for the parsha or whatever's going on in the in the days during the 3 weeks. I try to speak a little bit like we did on Sunday about the avodah for 3 weeks. I thought maybe it would be nice if over the summer we would doing it maybe selfishly a little bit for myself, because I don't usually give shirim on the teachings of Rav Kook. I feel like my relationship with Rav Kook is very personal, as many people have that type of relationship, the same thing with Rabbi Nachman. But I thought maybe I would try the way that a person can expand themselves in that way is to publicly share their feelings about certain things. So I thought maybe if every week we could take different ideas from Rav Kook. Maybe pick one idea. For those who were here last year, we did a similar thing with the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. We had one idea on top from the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, and then different sources to kind of flesh out the idea a little bit. So I thought maybe this year, if we could, maybe once a week, try together to learn a little bit of Torah from Rav Kook and try through the eyes of other tzaddikim to flesh out some of those ideas. Of course, though, when you're looking in the svarim of a person who was kolel so much of Torah, like Rav Kook was, it's hard not to find the things that you're in the middle of right now. For that reason, I'd like to learn with you first a piece of Torah from Rav Kook, from the Igros HaKodesh, from the Oros HaKodesh, I'm sorry. Essays, small essays, thoughts that Rav Kook had. First to learn that piece, which is completely wrapped up in the sugya and the inyan of the Beinim Mitzarim as well, and we'll try to explain that a little bit. The whole avoda of Tammuz and Av, Haba Alinu L'Tov HaMamish, which should be for Tov, that entire avoda of Tammuz and Av is screaming through the words of Rav Kook here in Oros HaKodesh. So we'll read together. The Hebrew of Rav Kook is a little bit hard. If anybody needs a pen, I have to write down the words. Anybody needs, I have one extra pen, finders, keepers. But we'll try it together a little bit. Rav Kook said, Avoda Gedola Umeira. It is a very great and illuminated service. A very great and illuminated way of serving God. Hila Hasiras Hakas Min Halev Lagamre. A very great and illuminated service, the way of serving God, is to eliminate from one's heart, to remove from one's heart anger completely. L'habita l'akol ba'ayin yafet, to look at everybody with good eyes, to always look at the good. The chemla shel chesed, with a certain compassion of kindness. She'ein l'gvul, that knows absolutely no boundary. There are a few typos here, because I typed it by hand, and I wasn't careful to check before, but you'll catch them as I read. Lidmos La'ayin ha'elyona, to try to be similar to try to be domele ayin ha'elyona. This piece, by the way, in Rav Kook's Oros HaKodesh, is titled, each piece, each essay has a little entry has a title head. This one is called Ha'ayin Ha'elyona, the elevated or the sublime eye, which is really what we're talking about here tonight. Lidmos La'ayin Ha'elyona, to try in some small way that we can to emulate the sublime eye, the divine eye. Eina Ila. Eina Dekula Chivura. The eye which is completely white. White meaning chesed. Gama Masha Osim Arashayim. And even when a person looks at somebody who's maybe not 100% morally or ethically up to our standards. Lachmo Lahayos Rishayim. Gama Laraim Hayosim Mechlotim Barishas. Even the most malicious, the most horrible, decidedly evil people. Lachmo Lahayosim Nishkayim Babut HaResha. To have compassion on them when you see that they are sunken, nishkayim babut haresh, in the mud of evil, in the mire, in the muck of evil. Ulimtzoes atzar atov shevem, to find good even in that. Ulimat es ha'erech shel achova, to try as best we can to limit the amount of, even if you see something which is bad, to limit the amount of bad that you're seeing in that person. Ulaharbos es erech hazuchus gam ala masisim v'hamidachim, even to find good, to find merit, to try to find some point of good in even people who are madichim and mesisim, people who are instigators, people who are troublemakers for the Jewish people. Sha'aleim namar lo tachmo v'lo tachza, about whom in Parshas Re'eh, we're going to read in a few weeks, the Torah tells us, do not have mercy on them, do not be compassionate, do not cover over their actions, do not try to whitewash their actions. Well, how does that make sense, says Rav Kook? When does that pasuk in Re'eh that says do not whitewash or do not cover, do not look compassionately upon somebody who is doing evil, that's talking about when you're formally in a bezdin. There's a bezdin that's sitting and judging a person with the dictates of a court, with the cold, harsh logic of a court, then the Torah says that a person has to be careful not to whitewash the facts. Avo batzara yuni. But when we're dealing with speculation, when we're dealing with looking at a person, Yesh ladon harve, a person has to be very careful. He has to make sure that he looks very carefully. To try to find the good intention in even an evil act, even in an evil misstep. Which you could even find, if you look carefully, you could even find in a person who's trying to instigate and trying to incite against the Jewish people all types of horrible things. When a person looks at that nakuda, at that point of good in that person, immediately he removes, he's mesalek the arasi, the poison. He removes the poison of that incitement that that person is trying to create against the Jewish people. The koach ha-maheres shaba holech u'mismayit. And in that moment that the person sees good in that evil person, even the most malicious person, in that moment, holech u'mismayit ha-maheres, the destructive nature of that person kind of is ebbing away. The end of all of these people, the end of these people, when we look in this way, and we are guaranteed that as the history of the world is unfolding, as the Maharal talked before, way before Rav Kook, as the history of the world is unfolding, if there are extra source sheets for our dear friend, as the history of the world is unfolding, the world is perfecting itself, and even these Rishayim will come out repaired. And then Rav Kook finishes on the second column on the left side. And when we think about those Gemaras, those surprises, if you really think about these in a deep way, these Gemaras, these Agaritas, that say the following. If you've heard of this Gemara, it should strike you in a new way. The way Rav Kook says it. Mibnei banav shal Sisra lamdu Torah b'Yerushalayim. That even the most evil enemies of the Jewish people, the children of Sisra Arasha, of Haman Arasha, these people, even they taught Torah in Yerushalayim, even they taught Torah in Bnei Brak. In the end, there's going to be a hamtaka of these people. And if that's true, Bnei Banav Shal Haman Lamdu Torah Bnei Brak, Anu Chodrim La'Omek HaChesed. What are Chazal doing if not descending, digging, penetrating into that deepest way of looking with the Ayin Heliona, with that elevated divine eye, which sees good even in someone like Haman, even in someone like Sisra? We're penetrating into that deepest level of chesed. She'ein lanu leisnaif bizarim shel sina gam al oyev hayoser nora. That we shouldn't be swept up. We shouldn't be swept up bizarim by the stream, by this rushing stream, shall sinagam ala oyev hayoser nora. Even on the most awesome, the most fearful, the most terrible enemy of the Jewish people, look how Chazal look at them. That they were able to, what did they say? There are so many things to say about Haman and Rasha, and Chazal say them as well. But that didn't stop them from seeing that there was good that came out of these people also. And there, from these people, from Haman and Sisera, we make a kal v'chomer to other Jews. There are Jews in this world who are doing things which we look at them and we see them as harmful and damaging and harisa, destructive. And for them, they think they're doing it for a good cause. They really, if you would ask them in a moment of quiet honesty, do you really think that you're doing something good? They would say, yeah, we really do. We're pushing Judaism in a certain way. We're trying to push the envelope. Not because we're trying to just buck the system. We're doing it because we actually believe that this is a forward-thinking way of moving Judaism in the right direction. Even though there are certain people, like Rav Kook, who were seeing these people and saying, they're moving in the wrong direction, but can we find any good in there? Of course we can. The kal v'chomer k'shma taros atobos kein, it's supposed to say, kein yotzos min ha-koach el ha-poel ba'uzas dvarim tovim mitukanim. And how often is it that when we see somebody who doesn't exactly fit into our social structure or doesn't fit into our religious group, when we see them do something good, we try to minimize the good that they're doing when it's mamish etzem good, it's really a good thing. We're looking for the bad even in the good that they're doing, and we're not seeing the good even in the bad that they're doing, the exact opposite of the Ayin El Yonah. Afal pish imatov yesh bo gam kein ra v'kilpo. Of course, there is certain bad which upsets the good which is being done. Nonetheless, ein hara mevatel hatov. Nonetheless, the ra, the bad that they do, or that we sometimes do, can't allow us to not see with that elevated way of looking, with that higher perception of seeing the good even within the bad that someone else is doing or that we ourselves are doing. That's the entry from Rav Kook in Oros HaKodesh. The entire entry, Mitchila ad Sofo, is screaming the avoda of Talmud and Av. If you look in the Sefer, Tame HaMitzvos, which was written by Rav Chaim Vital, the great student of the Arizal, he explains a very deep secret. Very simple, but very deep. Why is it that Rosh Chodesh is called Rosh Chodesh, as opposed to Haschalas HaChodesh, or some other word which could mean Rishon LeChodesh? Why is it called Rosh Chodesh? So the Arizal explained in a very deep way that Rosh Chodesh means that all of the Chodashim, all of the months of the year, actually find expression in the face, in the head. It's called Rosh Chodesh because every first of the month brings on a new characteristic which is found in the head. Look in source number one on the bottom, in the Haros. They try to explain a little bit what Rav Kook is talking about and why this is so important for us right now in Talmud and Av. V'da ki kol ha-chodesh nikra Rosh Chodesh v'inin ki kulam b'chinas ha-rosh. All of the months are a b'china of the head. What do we mean? V'sidram kachu, this is what I mean. Nisan gilgalsa. Nisan is the skull, is the upper part of the cranium, the skull. Iyar sivan beiz udnin. Iyar and sivan are the two ears. Tamuz av beiz einin. The two eyes correspond to the months of Tamuz and Av. Ulachin nechrof beiz hamikdash b'tamuz av. And that's why when the beiz hamikdash is destroyed in Tamuz and Av, what do we say? V'sod eini yarda mayim. In the months of Tamuz and Av, the beiz hamikdash started being destroyed. And therefore my eyes are streaming with tears. Shem beiz einayim. These are the two eyes. And so on and so forth. That each of the months corresponds to 12 different facets of the head. And that's why it's called Rosh Chodesh. The fact that Tammuz and Av are corresponding to the two eyes, the red and the left eye, should help us a little bit to understand how important it is to work on this tikkun of the Ayin Elyona at this time. The Ben Ishrai in Parshas Devarim, next week's Parsha, in source number 2, points out that it's well known that the Chorban of the Beis HaMikdash, and let's try to explain this a little bit, the Chorban of the Beis HaMikdash is the source for all evil, because we were talking about a little bit on Sunday night, for all evil, for all bad, and a little bit during Chinuch today. I saw you over there. Yeah. So, all evil, all bad, which comes to the world as a result of the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. Sheyum Yisivas Avon Eitz Hadas. And where does all of that come from? Where did the Chorban itself come from? So he kind of skipped steps along the way, but that itself came from the Chet Ha'egel, and that itself came from the Chorban, which took place by the Avon Eitz Hadas, from the eating of the tree of knowledge. Shahaya Te'ena Kamosh Amor Chazan, as Chazal teach us that Eitz Hadas was a Te'ena tree. Says the Ben Ishchai, V'hinei Tamuz Av, the words Tamuz and Av, these 2 months, we're trying to be metakin. We're trying to be metakin the Chorban Beis Hamikdash, and through that be metakin the Chet of the Eitz Hadas. Tamuz and Av is the Gematria, Tuf Aleph Nun Hei Te'ena. To tell us that Tamuz and Av, the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, really finds its root in the eating of the Eitz Hadas. And isn't that beautiful then, that if you go back to the actual Chet of the Eitz Hadas, what do you find in source number 3? Over and over again, what's being highlighted? What's the main faculty which is being used by Chava, which is the Pesach to the Chet of the Eitz Hadas? It's the eyes. Vateira isha kitova eitz lamachal, v'chitavu le'inayim, I forgot to circle that one. V'nechvat eitz lahaskil, v'tikach v'pirio v'tocha v'titein gam le'isha imava yochal, v'tipakach na'enei shneyem, v'yedu ki harumim heim. V'yitfaro le'a te'ena, and then you find the te'ena over there, and they put that on. Dafka, the chayr of the Eitz Hadas is taking place because of looking in the wrong way, because of not looking with the ayin ha'aliyot. It's for that reason that the Chorban of the Beis Hamikdash took place and we were exiled from Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, according to the Tzaddikim, is a land which is wrapped up in this Indian of the Ayin Ha'Elyona, which is why Rav Kook was so disturbed, was so upset at the people, at his contemporaries, who were unable to see the good in those people who were emptying the swamps and preparing the physical soil of Eretz Yisrael for the spiritual revolution which would take place after. Eretz Yisrael can only be given to a person who has perfected the tikkun of the Ayin Elyona. Everybody knows the famous Rashi in the beginning of the Torah. Bereishis bara Elokim es hashamayim ves haaretz. We begin the Torah with the discussion of the creation of the world, and Rashi is pretty bothered. The Sifsei Chachamim, who is the classic commentary on Rashi, who explains he was the original what's bothering Rashi. So the Sifsei Chachamim explains why is Rashi talking to us about, you know, the Torah should have really started with HaChodesh HaZalachem. What's Rashi bothered by? He's bothered by the fact that the Torah is a book of law. And if the Torah is a book of law, it should have started with the first mitzvah, which is Kiddush HaChodesh. What are you starting with this whole story about the creation of the world and everything? So what does Rashi say in source number 6? She'im yomru umos ha'olam Yisrael listim atem. You're thieves. Eretz Yisrael doesn't belong to you. Chorban of Eretz Yisrael belongs to you. That's what you should have. Shekivashtem artos shiras gayim. You conquered, you stole from us our land. Heim omru lam, so what can the Jews say to them? Kol ha'eretz shel kadosh baruch hu. Every single piece, every grain of sand in Eretz Yisrael, every drop of dirt belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hu bara, he created it, as we see, that's why we're telling the story now, Hashem's creation of the world. V'nosna l'asher yashar ve'enav, he gave it to the one who was fitting in his eyes. He gave it to whoever he sees fit in his eyes. The Rebbe of Alexander understood this teaching in a remarkable, remarkable way. See, the way that I just translated the words, Hashem gave it to whoever is Yashar Ve'inav, that means Hashem gave it to whoever he sees fit in his eyes. That's how I just translated it. But the Alexander says, you know what it means? Who deserves Eretz Yisrael? Who deserves an Eretz Yisraelic way of looking at the world? Someone who's Yashar Ve'inav. Not whoever is Yashar in Hashem's eyes, but one who is Yashar in his own eyes, meaning a person who has fixed, who has made his eyes straight, as opposed to crooked eyes. Crooked eyes which are always looking for the negative in other people, in other things, in situations. And if a person wants to retrieve Eretz Yisrael, as we're trying to do in this time of Tammuz and Av, the way to do that is to fix the eyes, to make the eyes straight. To fix the eyes so that they're straight again, so that they're not always focusing on the wrong thing. Ultimately, what's the point of that? Ultimately, the point of that is so that the Kala can return to the Chasam. So that Am Yisrael can return to her Chasam to Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly looking at Eretz Yisrael like a chassan, his eyes. We spoke a little about this last year, we had a whole shiur on this, that the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the eyes of Knesset Yisrael are looking at each other, dafka, and Eretz Yisrael, dafka, also 2 times a day when we say Kedusha, when the chazan is saying Kedusha, and we say Kadosh, 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 at that moment, it's like the moment under the chuppah when the chassan and kala are only looking at each other and no one else in the world exists. That's all we're trying to do. One of my favorite teachings, I'm fond of quoting, is from the Kli Yakar. There's a very strange Gemara in the Gemara Tanis that says if a person wants to find a good wife, so listen to the words of the Gemara. It's very strange. Kala shehi bebeis avia. If there's a young lady who's in her father's house, kol zman she'enei yafos. If she has beautiful eyes, so then that's all you have to know. If she has beautiful eyes, you don't have to look into anything else. So it's very strange. The Kli Yakar points out two immediate difficulties. Number one, Chazal are not normally used to talking about the beauty of women in such a striking, stark way. And number two, he says, aren't there many ladies who have beautiful eyes but are not the most attractive? So what does that mean? You look, she has beautiful eyes, you know everything else is great. It's a very strange Gemara. The whole thing, Mitrila itself is very strange. So the Kli Yakar says, it's not talking about her physical eyes. It's talking about, you want to know if you're about to get married. And you want to know, is this a person you should spend the rest of your life with? You have to see, does this person have an elevated way of looking at the world? If they have elevated eyes, if they have perfected, if they are mitaki in the Ayin Elyona, if they're able to see good in things around them, and they're not a bitter, jaded, complaining person, so then everything else is good. You know they're not going to be a person who's easily brought to anger. You know they're not going to be a petty person. You know they're not going to be a selfish person. Because if they have good eyes, if they have a good way of looking at the world, so then every other mida comes from there. Perfecting the Ayin Elyona is the Inyan HaKlali, which brings about the tikkun not only of Korban Beis HaMikdash and return to the land where you have Einei Yesharim, you have straight eyes like the Alexander taught us, but it's the return of the Chayit HaEitz Hadas to fix that original way of looking at the world that Chava looked at. She looked at the whole garden and she saw, I can have anything I want, but oh, there's this one thing I can't have, there's this one little nekuda, there's one problem. And she picked on that small thing which was not proper in her eyes, and for that reason she took that one small thing which wasn't to her liking, and that became the entire picture. Where does that come from? Where does that mentality come from? So it doesn't come from a holy place. If you look at the major machlokas between our great historic figures, there's a battle of souls, if you will, between the community of Yerushalayim and the community of Rome, Esav and Yaakov. If you look in the Pasuk in Mishlei, in source number 13, Yaakov Avinu is described as the Tov Ayin Hu Yevarech. Ki Nasan Milachmo Lada. Yaakov Avinu is called the Tov Ayin. Why is Yaakov Tov Ayin? So Yaakov Avinu is Tov Ayin, says the Vilna Gaon in source number 14, Amur Tov Ayin Ze Yaakov. Shachai Meo Shloshim Shana Ad Shevol Mitzrayim. Because he lived for how many years? He lived for 130 years until he came to Mitzrayim. V'sheva asrei shana hayav Mitzrayim. V'gematria yud zayin, ayin v'gematria kuflam. The ayin is those 130 years Avram, Yaakov Avinu lived in Eretz Yisrael. Those 17, tov, ayin, is the 17 years of Mitzrayim and the 130 years of Yaakov living in Eretz Yisrael. That's not really for now to discuss what that is, but Yaakov Avinu is described as tov, ayin. And we see this over and over again in Yaakov's life. Who had a more difficult life than Yaakov Avinu? With his daughter, with his sons, with his brother, with his parents not understanding him and liking his father, seemingly liking Esav. His whole life was seemingly one gigantic, miserable, suffering tragedy. And yet, Yaakov Avinu is the one in source number 15 who says, when he meets up with Esav, he goes to Esav and he says, please take my gift. And Esav says, brother, Yesh li rav, I have so much, I don't need from you. And Yaakov Avinu turns to Esav and he says, you might have a lot, but I have everything I need. Really, Yaakov Avinu, you have everything you need? After all that happened with your father-in-law, who he tricked you, and your daughter, and you married the wrong girl, and everything, but everything's perfect? Because Yaakov Avinu is the Ayin Tov of who you are. Yaakov Avinu is the one who could see with an elevated eye, who could see good in everything. Esav HaRasha, on the other hand, unfortunately, is someone who is described as a Meitzar Ayin. He's a Meitzar Ayin. He's a person who comes with a low way of looking at the world. With an Ayin Ra. Ayin Ra is Gematria 400. 400 is the number of people Esav came to fight Yaakov. But it's more than that. When Esav HaRasha is going to be buried, in source number 16, the Gemara in Sota says that Esav is coming to be buried, and he wants a place in Maris Machpelah. But Yaakov and his sons aren't going to let him. And out of nowhere, it's Machlokes between the seemingly between the Gemara and Tosas puts a strange medrash, that either Yehuda himself or Hushim ben Dan came and clapped Esav on the head, and Esav's head rolled into Maris Machpelah.
So the Svarim explained Esav's head was in Maris HaPel because even though he didn't do mitzvos, he wasn't a person who used his body to serve God. He was very smart. He was filled, his head was filled with Torah. But there's an amazing thing. If you look carefully at the Gemara says in Source number 16 of the Bold, Amr Luhu Va'ad Asi Naftali Ma'ara, until Naftali came back from Mitzrayim to prove that Yaakovinu was really the one who was buried there. So what happened? So Chushim ben Dan saw that Yaakovinu was laying b'bizayon, Mutal Avi Abba, my grandfather, the father of my father, is lying b'bizayon. Shakul Kulpa, he took a club. Machia Reisha, and what happened? He popped Esav over the head. Nisran Einav v'nafal Akara, the Yaakov. What happened? He popped him in the head, and it doesn't say his head fell off, like the measure says. It says his eyes came out, and his eyes went right in front of Yaakov Avinu. Fell right by the feet of Yaakov Avinu. Listen to this. Patachnu Yaakov le'ineha v'achich. Yaakov opened his eyes at that moment. What a bug out. Yaakov opened his eyes, saw the eyes of Esav on the floor, and smiled. What's going on? Because Esav's head is going to be buried in Maris HaPel, but his eyes can't go there. Because Esav's eyes are ra'ayin. He finds bad in everything. Yaakov Avinu's eyes. Yaakov is the tov ayin. At that moment, Yaakov Avinu opens his eyes and he says, my eyes are going to Maris HaPel. My eyes are going to the place where Adam Rishon is. Because I'm going to fix, and my descendants are going to fix, the problem of the Chedei Tzadas. My descendants are going to be, even though there's going to be a Chorban, even though there's going to be a Mitzrayim, there's going to be a Tikkun also. There's going to be a Tikkun of the Ayin Elyon, like our folks spoke about in the beginning. We're speaking now in generalities. But if we want to move from the world of the general to the world of the specific, so then the most important thing we can do to bring about this tikkun of the Einayim is to look at each other in an elevated way, like Rav Kook was saying. We could look at each other in an elevated way. In source number 21, I didn't really quote it inside, but I have a problem with sources. They quote from the Bel's Rebbe, Amar quote Katsho Maran, Morinah of Aaron. Of Aaron of Bel said in the name of his father, Rav Yoshua of Bel's, that his father loved the Derech HaPilpul B'Limra Torah. His father had an uncanny desire to always study Torah in this pilpul sort of way, trying always to see Torah through, you know, trying to squeeze a Rambam that doesn't really make any sense through the eye of a needle to try to be miyashiv in this way and that way. That was his fit. Bichtias was good, but Pilpul was, he was head over heels for Pilpul. So somebody once asked him, why do you love Pilpul so much? So he said, Ki lefa'amim tzarech l'lumot z'chus al Yehudi. Because sometimes you need to be mefalpel, you see a Jew. And on the surface, it's like, whoa, there's a lot that needs fixing over there. And just like sometimes you see a shver Rambam that needs to be fixed up, so that's a good testing ground, that's a good battling ground, that's a weightlifting gym to be able to pump up your ability to see something which looks shver and make it work out. He said, sometimes you see a Jew comes to you and wants a blessing from the Rebbe. And the Rebbe's looking at him, he's like, this guy is like... So you need the skill of pilpul to be able to look and turn this guy inside and outside and hufflepuff, hufflepuff, the kulabuff, because every single Jew is filled with every single mitzvah. And if you look in a proper way, you'll be able to find them. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, one line in the middle of a long discussion that he's talking about, the derech of learning Torah, the derech pardes, pshat, remez, drash, and sod. He says that as long as we're talking about Pardes, I might as well tell you that when we're talking about the characters of Tanakh, we also have to learn about them, b'derech Pardes. Because every single person, in Surah number 22, K'mosh Nimtza b'Torah Pardes, just like in the Torah there's Pardes, K'mo Kein b'chol Adam yesh Pardes. So too in every single person there's Pardes. There's a pshat of David Weinberg, there's also a remez, there's also a drash, there's also a sod. And maybe I know it, maybe I don't know it, but certainly no one else knows the sod of David Weinberg. And certainly you don't know the sod of anybody else. The pardes that exists in Torah, that different levels of depth, those different levels of depth which exist in the study of Torah exist in the study of people as well. Rav Shlomo Kalbach once said that in yeshivas, we're very good at studying the Torah of B'Shivtcha B'Veisech when we're sitting in the Beis Medrash. What do you do in the Beis Medrash when you're sitting in your house? You have svarim, you have books. But the Torah of Uvalechtecha V'Aderach, when you're walking on the road, which is the ability to see other people as Torah also, when you're walking the road and you see another person, to be able to darshan him, b'derech pardes, you'll be mefalpel on that person, to find the nekuda tova in that person, that's the tikkun of the Ayin Elyona. And it's not just a nice drasha, it's a halacha. The Shulchan Aruch says in Yerideya, in the halachas of Avelis, For those on this side of the room, if you'd like to join the Kollel next year, we'll probably be learning Hilchos Avelos if it's still around, it still exists. But in Hilchos Avelos, maybe we'll get a women's Kollel going also, who knows. In Yoredeya, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that is a big mitzvah to give a hesped. It's a big mitzvah. If someone passes away, it's a big mitzvah to give a hesped for that person. Not to just have that person leave the world, be nifter min olam, and then be buried to his eternal resting place without proper recognition of who this person was. And the Shulchan Aruch says, in source number 23, in the second line, Lahaskir Shivcho Vaasar Lahaflik Vishivcho Yosir Midai. It's forbidden to over exaggerate about the way this person was. If the person was a Baal Staka, you can't over exaggerate the way this person was. You're not. It's very in the Sifrei Kabbalah, the Sifrei Chasidos, it talks about how that moment of the Hesped is a moment when the entire, that's when like that whole scary thing that all your teachers in fourth and fifth grade were talking about, how like all the family members are sitting around and everyone's watching. That moment of the Hesped, you have the entire Bez Nishal Mala and all the people you know who are in the Olam HaEmes and all the people in this world who are paying attention to this one person. At that moment, it's a Shas Din. And if a person over-exaggerates, oh, he was such a Talmud Chacham, he was nice to everybody, and the guy was a jerk, and he was lazy, and he never learned, and he never worked on himself, and he was just comfortable his whole life with who he was and never tried to push himself a little bit further, herself a little bit further. So it's a very horrible thing to start talking to that person saying, oh, he was this, he was that. And in Bez Nishal Mala, they're looking at him like, this guy? Is that? That's... So says the Shulchan Aruch, but you should exaggerate a little bit. So the Taz, in source number 24, the Taz says, what do you mean exaggerate a little bit? A little bit of sheker is also sheker. You're not allowed to, what do you mean you can exaggerate? You shouldn't exaggerate, but you can exaggerate a little bit. So the Taz says, you know why? Because Mistama, the way that you look at that person, he's really a little bit deeper. You looked at that person, you said, this is what he is. But Mistama, if you would look at him, b'derech pardes, the way that the Bez Nishal Mala is really looking at him, you would see, actually, in fact, that he is a little bit more. So it's mutter to say a little bit more than what you actually see, Be'inayim. Because not every person has been talking in the Ayin El Yonah to see this person as he really is. It's a halacha. The Gemara blames the entire Chorban on this mice of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. You could spend years talking about this. You could give a whole college course over the course of a whole year and talk about the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza and all the different things that come out of that story. One of the amazing things that comes out of that story is the end of the story and what happens after. What happens after is that Bar Kamtza, the one who was embarrassed, was kicked out of the Suda by, not Kamtza, Kamtza was the guy who was supposed to be invited to the Suda, but by the Gvir, who threw this whole big party. So Bar Kamtza goes to the Emperor of Rome. And he says to the Emperor of Rome, you know those Jewish people, they don't really care too much for you. They don't really care about you, and they're planning a rebellion against you. And I'll prove to you that they're not loyal to you. If you give me a carbon, so everybody knows that a non-Jew is allowed to bring a carbon olah in the Beis HaMikdash. They knew that. We know that. Right? A non-Jew is allowed to bring a carbon olah in the Beis HaMikdash. And I'll bring the carbon that you give me to bring to them, and watch, they're not going to bring it. They're going to reject your carbon, just because it's you, because they don't like you. It's trying to stir up trouble for the Jews. So the Gemara says that Bar Kamtza went, and he took this sheep that the Roman emperor gave him, that the Caesar gave him, and the Gemara says he put a slit in the lip of the sheep. And then the Gemara says, or, according to a different Kirsa, he punctured the membrane of the eye. So the Maharal talks about this lip business, and I would like to suggest that the ultimate Kirsa, which the Maharal doesn't really talk about, is exactly Nogeya to what we're talking about. The Maharal says, what's the pshat that he put a slit in the lip? Why didn't he cut off a leg? Why didn't he, I don't know, take a bat to the... Why didn't he cut off the ear, right? Like we learned this morning. Why did he dafka cut the lip? So the Maharal says, because the nations of the world would understand. If someone's missing a leg, that's a mum. The Roman Caesar would understand the reason you can't bring that is because it's not proper to bring to the one true God of the world that you believe in a maimed animal with no leg. But the Maharal says, but to bring with a little cut in the lip, a little pagam, as the Maharal darshans it, a little pagam in the dibor is not such a big deal. Because by the nations of the world, it's sticks and stones can break my bones, words can't hurt me. By the yidden, we don't have such a concept. by the Jews, a little cut in the lip is already a big pagam. And that wouldn't have impressed the emperor enough. He wouldn't have understood that the reason they're not bringing it is because of this small little moth. But according to everything that we're saying, this little poke in the eye, in the membrane of the eye, is equal to what the Maharal is telling us in terms of the lip. A small pagam in the way of looking at the world, a small pagam in the way of looking at another person is already, by the Jewish people, is a huge pagam. We have to work on being mataki in the inayim in order to bring about the tikkun of the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Kook was no stranger to this idea himself. He talked the talk and he walked the walk. In the last two sources we have from Rav Kook two different nemros from Rav Kook, one of them which hopefully one day will end up on an album. The last one. Tzadikim atahorim einam kovnam al harisha. The great tzaddikim, the perfectly righteous, the perfectly pure righteous people, inam kol lamal rishon, they don't complain about bad. There's something bad in the world. There's something evil in the world. They don't complain about the bad. Al mosif and tzedek. Instead, they say, how can I bring a little bit more righteousness to the world? Inam kol lamal kfir al mosif and amuna. They don't complain about evil. They don't complain about kfira. They don't complain about heresy in the world. Rather, they try to find instances, like he was talking about in the first piece. They try to find instances of amuna to try to bolster people's amuna. Not to find the kfira within them. Einam kovlim al ha-ba'arus al ha-mosifim chachma. They do not complain about people being boorish, being unintelligent, people being suffering from lack of intellect. Rather, they try to increase wisdom in the world. They try to increase understanding in the world. Rav Kook was very misunderstood for his relationship with the chilonim. Those who describe themselves as the chilonim, people who are trying to free themselves from religion and trying to rebuild Eretz Yisrael from the ground up physically, but not necessarily with the same type of values of Shabbos and Kashrus and Taharas and Mishpacha, which Rav Kook would have hoped they would have. Nonetheless, Rav Kook was able to find good in those people, and he got a lot of flack for that. There's a famous letter which I'd like to share with you, and then I'm getting close to the end over here. Rav Kook wrote a letter to the Ridvaz. The Ridvaz was a massive Talmud Chacham, a genius in Nigla. And Rav Kook was writing letters back and forth with the Ridvaz, trying to explain to him his derech of being Makar of Jews, while at the same time trying to explain his heter, Mechira, for Shvius, and it was getting a little bit messy. So in one of the letters in the Igros HaKodesh of Rav Kook, in Igros HaRiyah, Rav Kook writes, Umasha Kasav Marin, source number 25, L'tmo Alai. And that which the master, my master, the Ridvaz, keeps on writing to me in wonderment, that my shita is that I try to bring people close to Judaism, I try to find the good in people and try to bring them close. Gam as Poshe Yisrael, even those Jews who are distant from maybe Torah mitzvos. Kedei lachzirim b'tshuva, v'kasavti lo, v'remez kavanasi, and I tried to write, v'derach remez, what my kavana is in trying to be makar of these Jews. Shakol mishu mukhshar lasuk b'pnimius raze Torah. That anybody who spends time studying the deeper secrets of Torah is preparing himself to see who mismale yoser mi'ura chesed shal Torah chesed. He's filled with this Torah's chesed of the Torah's Habal Shem Tov, the Torah of the Arizal, the Torah of Shem Bar Yochai, to be able to see good in other people. Va'alav achov alasuk b'tikun nufloim v'kir v'chokim. That person is uniquely fitting to bring about a tikkun in these other people. And he says, I tried to explain this to you b'derech remez, but if you'd like, I'll try to explain it to you b'derech nigla. And he goes on to a whole explanation about the difference between a segula and a mamlechas kohanim. It's a beautiful letter, but we don't have the whole thing here. What Rav Kook is explaining is similar to what we saw from the Belzer Rebbe, that a person who looks deep, a person who learns deep, a person who isn't satisfied with just learning, and I say just in parentheses, in quotes, because of course, This is our bread and butter. But a person who just suffices in saying, all I want to do all day is learn Gemara, Tosfos, and Ritva, and I don't want to ever open a Sfas Emes, I don't ever want to open a piece of Rav Kook, I don't ever want to open something which is from the wellsprings of Chassidus, from the deeper aspects of Torah, is basically saying, I'm cutting myself off from being able to see the world in a deep way. Someone once asked the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim, Rav Machlis, I believe the person who asked this question was Rabbi Judah Michel himself, what is Chassidus? What is Chassidus? Can you define Chassidus? And Rav Machlis said, Chassidus means that you know that there is always something deeper. it means in Torah you know there's something deeper. The Rashi that you just read, it's actually deeper than what you thought it was. The person that you're looking at right now is actually deeper than you think it is. The Yom Tov that you're experiencing right now is actually deeper than you think it is. That's what Chassidus means. It means that there's something deeper. Like I once read in some crazy book that one Chassid once asked another Chassid, what is Chassidus? What makes a person a Chassid? So the guy said, anybody who wants to be a Chassid, that's a Chassid. So then he said back to him, he said again, he said, and when does a person stop being a Chassid? So he said, when you think that you are already a Chassid, then you stop being a Chassid. When you want to be one, that's what being a Chassid means. It means you're looking for the next thing, you're looking for the next level. But as soon as you think you're there, you're not anymore. Being a Chassid has nothing to do with this. Although you keep hoping for the next level, it's going down and down and down, right? But that's not what it has to do with. It has nothing to do with this. It doesn't have to do with longer and longer coats, longer and longer hair. It has to do with more and more dedication towards looking at good in other people, more and more dedication to trying to find the Rabboni Shalom and the Nigla of Torah and the Nistar of Torah. This is what Rav Kook was begging for. This is what Rav Kook was begging for in the world. As we know, to Mitaki and the Ayin El Yonah and Dafka in these months of Tammuz and Av, we have a unique opportunity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was sending to us in the Rosh, that part of the head of the eyes, of the two eyes of Tammuz and Av. These Yom Tovim that are coming to us now, the Yom Tovim which will hopefully be Me'evel Lechag, the opposite of what the Pasuk in Amos describes this morning, V'hafachti Chageichem Le'evel, will be the exact opposite, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring the Tikkun Ha'inayim Elyonim, and in that way bring about the Tikkun of the Chag, which is now in a state of Eva. I want to end with a story. I heard this story from Moshe Weinberger a number of years ago, and I had the opportunity to say it over when I was in Poland, by the kever of the tzaddik who was by, it came into me in a new way. The more opportunities you have to tell stories, especially in places where it's matim to tell the story, it comes in a new way. So there was a tzaddik named the Rebbe of Vorka. The Rebbe of Vorka was very, very deep. And his father brought him and his brother, his older brother, David, to go see his Rebbe, Rav Yitzchak Vorka's Rebbe, Rav Simcha Bonim of Pshiska. So they came into the Rebbe, and they were both young, they were both little kids. Rav Nachum Mendel Vorka was the younger of the two, and Rav David was the older. And when Rav Yitzchak brought his two sons in, almost b'derech mofes, b'derech nes, the Rebbe reached under his table and pulled out two ice-cold glasses of beer. Where that came from, I don't know. And he offered the glass of beer first to the older brother, to Reb David. And he said to him, make a bracha, make a l'chaim. And this little boy, who never tasted beer in his life before, took the glass of beer, took the mug of beer in his hand, made a shahakal, raised it up to his lips and put it to his mouth. And just as the beer touched his lips, he made this face like, oy vey. And he drank it to show the Rebbe respect. And he put it down and he said, Rebbe, it's bitter. Rebbe, it's so bitter. And then the Rebbe took the second glass and he pushed it in the direction of Menachem Mendel. And he took the glass and he raised it to his lips and he said, Baruch Hashem, Kedem Shalom, 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 and he put the beer to his lips and he made that same face. And he swallowed the beer just to be respectful to the Rebbe and he put it down and he said, Rebbe, it's so bitter, but it's so good. He said, Rebbe, it's bitter, but it's good. And when the Rebbe heard that, he looked at him, he said, both of you are going to be very, like the Gemara says in many places, both of you are going to be great Talmid Chachamim, both of you are going to be great leaders of the Jewish people. But he turned to Menachem Mendel, the younger brother, and he said, a person who can find even the good and the bitter, that's going to be a person who's going to eventually help the Jewish people to get out of Gaulis. Kadosh Baruch Hu should help us, should be able to make many L'chaims together, and even if it's a little bit bitter, it should also be very good. Shabbat.